Welcome to the Fan Experience Experience with Darren and Mark and a special guest.
Hello and welcome to the Fan Experience Experience, the podcast that explores the power of engagement in football and other sports. Join me, Mark Bradley, and my co-pilot, Darren Young, as our guests tell us their stories and share what they've learned. In season two of this podcast, we're exploring fan engagement post-COVID, and we're uncovering new ideas to help your club, league or association to prosper amidst all of this uncertainty as we emerge from the pandemic. So in this particular episode, we're talking to Kevin Rye, the founder of Fan Insights, formerly of Supporters Direct, and also key to the team behind the rebirth of Wimbledon in the form of AFC Wimbledon, the Phoenix club that's been one of the most remarkable stories in football over the past two decades. Kev, welcome. How are you?
Yeah, I'm not quite so sure it's we're as stellar as all that at the moment at Wimbledon, given that we're only headed one way, which is south down the table. But other than that, I'm fine. I recovered from COVID myself over Christmas, not too bad for me, and doing some interesting stuff, which hopefully people will see very soon. And one big idea, which I hope will really, really help a lot of people, but I won't go into that now. Yeah, it's good. It's very good.
Well, Darren and I usually start with these podcasts with a kind of a little topical point, and our topical point sometimes off the pitch, but probably on the pitch this time, it's both our teams, Walsall and Sunderland's ability to have 1-1 draws. And Darren's team, Walsall, your lot start to do that now, haven't you?
Again, yeah, we started the season doing that, and we've just sort of just picked it up again recently. So at least it's consistent, if nothing else.
But isn't it the worst result in football, a 1-1? It's kind of worse than a defeat psychologically, don't you think?
I always think it depends when your one is scored and when their one is scored. So if the other night, for example, there, we conceded an equaliser 10 minutes from time, so that always feels like a defeat. But if you're the one who gets the equaliser, then, I don't know, maybe it feels quite a lot better.
Well, Kev, your team, as many people will know, is AFC Wimbledon. And there have been periods recently when there's been a struggle, but they're pretty much established, is it fair to say, in the third tier now?
Well, yeah, look, I mean, you've got to look at it over the long term, haven't you, in the end? We're stuck in a bit of a rut at the moment. The idea of a 1-1 draw would be like the greatest result ever at the moment. You know, and I'm noticing the usual gubbins about managers not got much time. You know, it's just one of these things. It's tough. It's a weird season. No one can tell what's really going on, how the absence of crowds is actually directly affecting or not players and the performances. And, you know, it's the thing is, yeah, I think this is now our fourth. The more I work in the game, the less I become focused on what goes on the pitch anywhere, let alone my own club. But yeah, I think this is our fourth season in League One. We've done it back at Plough Lane, and it is back at Plough Lane, and it kind of, in some senses, doesn't really feel real because we haven't been there. I still haven't even walked past it since it actually started being used as a stadium, because obviously with what's been going on, I live sort of 40 kilometres outside, 60 kilometres outside of London, away from Plough Lane. But you know, you can't argue, I don't care what anyone says, it's one of the greatest football stories ever written. And there is, I will add one thing, there is almost nothing of a fairy tale about that. That has been, whether it was on the rise up from the, you know, the first time we rose up the table into the first division, that was hard work and planning, and, you know, it was, and a lot of this is relevant to these conversations, planning and strategy, and Ari Bassett and his team doing things that no one was doing until 10, 20 years later, video analysis and stuff like that, because we knew we didn't have resources even then to compete in the same way in terms of transfers. And then, you know, on the rise again, yeah, we might have had the odd lucky break, winning in the 98th minute or whatever it was against Staines Town in the Ryman League playoffs, getting us up that season when we won. You're talking about equalising at the last minute. We equalised and then won the game with a bloke who basically hadn't played for ages because he kind of, I think, he'd fallen out with the manager, and the manager brought him back for the game. Yeah, the odd bit of luck, but actually, this is bloody hard work.
Yeah.
And a lot of thought and a lot of effort. And then, of course, the return to Plough Lane itself, you know, all from a personal perspective, I was involved in a bit of it. But, you know, the way that we did that, yeah, we'd stumbled to the point where it was necessary to raise the bond. But the work that we and our colleagues and our fans did, and everyone did. Even the people that I disagreed with, in the end, pulled together. And, you know, it's a magnificent story of not, it's not a magnificent tale of, you know, it's Hans Christian Andersen. This is a magnificent tale of people pulling together and working and being strategic and thinking about this stuff and work, you know, just going back and doing it again and again and again and again. And
well, that leads to my kind of first question, really, is that that particular bond that, that your club has. I mean, I remember me and the producer 10 years ago going to see North Greenford United play Leighton Buzzard. That's not their team, but it was a team from there. And the one little souvenir that the chairman who we met just sat outside on a little formica table outside the changing rooms, and he posted it to us as well, because obviously a club of that size doesn't have a club shop, was a double badge, pin badge from the time that North Greenford United played AFC Wimbledon.
Yeah.
You know, and this was kind of a part of their own culture that they played with Wimbledon. So I guess my, my question is, in the work that you do, which is around really understanding and maximising the stakeholder relationship between the club and its fan base, what is the bond between AFC Wimbledon's fans and the club give that club that you see absent in other clubs?
There isn't a bond between the club and the fans. It is one and the same thing. In the end, it's this sense that when, and I think managers have remarked on it, it's this thing that when you go in there, you know who owns that place, and it's not an arrogant swagger. It's not a we own it, keep your mouth shut, do your job. It's because we have, as fans, we have tremendous respect for coaching staff, and this was something, and management staff, this was something that we tried to inculcate as much as we could at Supporters Direct, the other, you know, in speaking in terms of another we, another collective.
Yeah,
you know, when fans either took clubs over or when they got involved in the running of their clubs and they built relationships with the people running, that they began to understand that being a manager is a position that, whilst isn't unassailable and you can't just keep a manager on forever, it should come with respect. And so we have all of that. And obviously, you know, it's almost a sense of hero worship when players put on their shirts. And they're not dissimilar to lots of other people. Because of our era, you know, coming through the divisions as we did first time round. But it is a sense that this is a club that is us. We own it. It's not, and it's not just that we didn't buy it. We had to recreate it. We had no choice. And I suppose in the end, that makes a massive difference between the sense of any sense of ownership, even by people who buy a club and save it. There's most definitely a sort of difference there. Or who are in, you know, either just are fans, you know, and there isn't any specific sort of relationship there and no sort of big, you know, part ownership or something like that. And sort of all points in between. The allegiance is still the same. All of that is still the same. But there is a sense that this thing wouldn't exist without us. And the idea that anyone could change that nearly happened in December.
Yeah.
And that will never happen again on our watch.
Yeah.
And so it's just that it's, you know, it's the same as your bond with your own clubs at Walsall and Sunderland or Bradford. I think Luis is a Bradford City fan, for example, isn't he? The bond is just expressed in a slightly different way because we had to make this come into being again. We had to resurrect it. So it's that sense of ownership and that sense of just, we're confident in knowing how we feel about things.
Hey, Kevin, I know we're going to go on to COVID later, so I'll just, but before we get on to that subject, from what you were just saying, what for other clubs, what would you say is the biggest issue that clubs face if they want to get engagement right?
You know, the thing that sort of hangs over everything when it comes to football, and I think you can broaden it out to other sports, but let's stick to football, obviously, is that the game moves at such a pace. You know, literally, we know it does, but metaphorically too. In terms of business, it moves so fast, whether it's fixtures or transfer windows, the actual financing of the game, which, you know, hopefully has settled down a bit in League One and Two with some salary cap, some hard salary capping that's going on. But it's the time to think. It's, you know, everyone I speak to who runs a football club or who is a fan in a sort of leadership position of an organisation, you kind of... you just don't have the time to breathe. And the other problem in there as well is, so you don't have the time necessarily to consider the right ideas for your, for engagement and for developing your relationship, let alone actually spend finding time in the diary. You know, then there's an internal, perhaps there's an internal way you organize the business. Is it, it can be a big issue. And have you only got a chief executive, or are there some, say, are you like Norwich, where it's a medium to large size club, and it has senior executives at four, I think it's three or four levels, where so it means that they're not looking after everything.
Yeah.
So it can be the way you internally organise as well as the, just the sheer pace of the game. But I think sort of the other part as well is that I think a lot of people will be familiar with the term laissez-faire, leave well alone.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, for those who aren't familiar with it, it basically means it's light touch. And the idea that, for example, the EFL is a central repository of skills and expertise on, let's say, finance or fan engagement or something like that, is just anathema. Yes, they try, and you know, it's to the credit of people like yourselves that you've managed to get them to work with you to improve the front end experience, as it were, the fan experience, that, you know, the stuff people actually experience when they walk in. You know, the FSA and then previously Supporters Direct, and less so the FSF at the time, but the FSA these days works hard to try to convince the EFL, and don't forget that's made up by clubs. Mm-hmm. The engagement, active engagement and listening, it's the big, you know, it's becoming a big word in all sorts of business, not just football and sport, but listening to your fans is actually a positive, brings you a positive benefit. So I think it's number one, I think it's as I say, there's just the sheer pace of the game and the noise around it. Secondly, it can be down to the internal organisation of the football club itself, and that can be affected by the first. And then the third being, you know, the governing bodies and the leagues, the associations are not sort of, they don't provide that support because they're sort of not meant to, because their biggest role is to provide as much, generally put the games on, ensure they work, ensure the tills ring with all the broadcasting and sponsorship deals.
It's interesting because we had a chief executive of a club in the EFL say to us that, basically, with the salary cap and the less pressure on being able to compete in terms of wages and transfer fees and players, there was the opportunity to spend more on fan engagement and the experience. And you know, it's great that they say that, but you know, it's one of those things where you actually think, I wonder if that'll actually happen in reality, or whether people go back to what they used to do.
That's the key issue, and that then comes down, I suppose, actually the fourth thing, which I didn't include, is a cultural thing. And that, I mean, I suppose that is the laissez-faire, but it's a broader cultural thing, I suppose. So it's kind of almost three and a half. This British corporate culture, English corporate culture, is not about listening to stakeholders in an organisation. It's about providing a good or service on the part of a private company. And we've also disestablished sort of cooperatives. A lot of that stuff disappeared in the 80s and 90s,
yeah,
and building societies, and the idea of businesses that sort of listen is to some extent anathema. And it's also hard to know how to do it, because there are so many competing ideas out there, and I think there's so much fluff, marketing fluff,
yeah,
which tells you solve your problems with this app. You know, you've got a fan engagement problem, press this button, you know, take this data collection and you'll know. Well, yeah, how are you going to actually be able to utilise this when you've got no resources? Because I think it is just, you know, in the end, you know, we'll adopt ideas from other industries. We'll do it unthinkingly. That's not abnormal. Mm. And, you know, all of those issues that I laid out, the three and a half or four,
yeah,
will affect your ability to adopt them. And you've seen this, Mark and Darren.
Well, This is, you know, you and I have had chats about this in the past, and I guess one area that frustrates us is, we were just talking about it before the podcast, and that is the fact that 35% of Scottish clubs haven't replied to a fan's tweet all season. that data comes from, when we put the podcast out, we'll reference that correctly, but brought to my attention on Twitter by David Charles of FIFA, once of Scotland. Scottish football. And it's kind of, it's interesting. In the same time, in my inbox, there's an invitation to an online fan engagement conference. And I guess where I'm coming to with this question is that that for me seems to be aimed at the elite clubs. And, you know, the focus that we've got in our little organisation is on non-elite clubs. It's on clubs for whom the match day is the prime, you know, generator of income. And it does seem to be a huge distraction for non-elite clubs that the only messages, and I'll come to your contribution in a second, but the main messages seem to be all about, you know, digital engagement.
I mean, look, the fan engagement index showed up the problem in English football. I think it was 10, maybe 12 clubs had what we recommended, which was a channel for listening, a kind of supporter services channel, a sort of customer services channel, might be called the other business.
Well, I was going to ask you if you could just outline the fan engagement index, because fascinating source of info.
So it was the first time anyone had tried to quantify and measure fan engagement, actually understand what it was, regularise it, if you like, give it some definition. And, you know, and I mean, what is it at the most important level? You know, output is fan engagement, but it's a tactical fan engagement. What's the structure of it all? And so it looked at dialogue, transparency and governance, and all of those are issues around fan engagement. It's not the governance of the football club in terms of how the ownership is expressed and all that. It's governance of the fan engagement programs they have, etc. And it looked very things like structured dialogue, because that's another phrase people are chucking around, and there's lots of stuff happening that isn't being given much form and shape, and I think a lot of people don't quite understand. And so it was aimed to quantify that and to understand it. And actually, it wasn't. Although I begrudgingly accepted the need for a league table, I actually argued against it. But my advisor, basically a guy called Ollie Holtaway, who's been invaluable in creating the index, said you have to have it because it's what will attract people to it. But despite that. And the reason I was sort of a bit lukewarm about the idea of the league table was because I don't want it to be a beating people over the head index. Yeah. I want it to be, right, so this is where we are. We know where to go. And the interesting bit was whether it was people who did really well, clubs who did really well, or whether it was clubs who didn't do so well. And I prefer to use that, didn't do as well as maybe as they wanted or expected. I had phone calls from all those people. And, you know, the way that I'd collected the data, by the way, was all publicly available information. So I was kind of doing a bit like you do. I was following the journey of a fan, trying to understand how my club told me things and communicated with me. And it was fascinating. And it opened up so many conversations with so many people. But just that thing about the tweets, you know, we found very few do the supporter services channel. Lots of clubs don't know how to do it, because it's also about organising yourself. It's also about whether there are opportunities to work with volunteers and stuff like that. And there's loads of issues around that. But the interesting thing, Mark, is, you know, I understand the niche you work in many respects, but all of the stuff you say applies to bigger clubs. And actually some of these so-called big clubs, you know, because they do fade, and as you know yourself, big clubs fade, history moves on, things change.
Thanks for reminding me.
It'll only get worse, Mark. All of them need to learn this stuff and understand it. And I might add, need to be given the opportunity to, because I don't think they are. I think too much is assumed.
Yeah, well, that brings me to a kind of a COVID question. And it's a simple one, really, in as much as, you know, when we talk to clubs around Europe and, you know, people at league levels and what have you, there is a lot of anecdotal evidence being shared at the moment about fans' intention to continue to attend, you know. So we're talking about clubs for, you know, who rely on match day income for the viability. And I'm wondering, you know, what percentage, I'm not asking for an exact figure there, but just to kind of highlight where we are with that, what percentage of clubs, say in England, would have carried out some form of dialogue with fans to try and understand on an ongoing basis the extent to which they fully intend to come back and attend matches, or perhaps because of medical, economic, biosecurity or even, you know, just wanting to not come back until they can hug a stranger in the away end, you know, and because I think at the moment there's a lot of guesswork. I think there's an assumption that there'll be a boost, but then after that boost, you know, there's, you know, what is there? I mean, do you see that when you talk to people? Do you see that they're actively preparing for that and trying to understand what fans' intentions are?
Some are definitely thinking about it. I think it's a slightly different order of cause, but for me, this is where, I genuinely don't want to descend into needless, mindless criticism of organisations in football. But for me, this is where the leadership of organisations, albeit that in the case of the AFL and the Premier League and the National League, etc., are member-owned, and I'm sick and tired of reminding people that these institutions are actually owned by their members, and so a lot of strategies are decided by them. However, the day-to-day execution is done by people who are quite hard-pressed, got a lot to do, etc. But this strikes me as an area where those bodies need to be looking at those issues, need to be pushing them, promoting them, if not finding budget to do them. I mean, that can be a problem when you're trying to squeeze the last drop of the broadcasting deal and sponsorship associations at central level. You know, the clubs are demanding as much money as possible. And then also the FA. I'm a little bit surprised that the Football Association haven't seen a strategic opportunity here to start to ask those questions, because there has to be a point for me, and I don't want to go too much into governance because it's an area of interest, but it's not an area of expertise, and I don't cover that in Fan Insights anymore. Is that, you know, they were kind of shooed out of the day-to-day governance of football back in about 2013. As a result of the Greg Dyke stuff that was done, the chairman's review. And then, you know, I'm looking at it and thinking it's exposed a lot of cracks. I think for me, the FA could be advancing some thinking in this area. But look, the game's riven with politics. It's one of the facts of it, and it's a problem governing it. Yeah, clubs are definitely, some of them are definitely looking at it. But again, a lot of this comes down to, what are you doing as a club? When I think, on a practical level, clubs need support. That's what I've found particularly over the last two or three years, and certainly my last couple of years at Supporters Direct, more and more I spend time with people running these complex organisations called football clubs. You know, I feel their pain because there are so many good people trying their best, but they kind of get broken on the wheel half the time, and they're trying to juggle all these things. So, yeah, they need to be thinking about it, but where are they going to do it? And what, you know, they've just had to put someone on furlough who would normally do that kind of thing. You know, you look at Stoke had to do a load of internal reorganisation stuff because of COVID. I know Doncaster, every single club had to do something to reduce staffing pressure, all that kind of stuff. So it's hard. And I think that's where I look at this and think, we need to start creating these resources for people, because I think we assume too much, and it's not going to change unless we make it change. And that includes all of us in the industry, I think.
So to interrupt, Kevin, but just on that point then, with because I think, especially in the very early parts of the recovery from COVID, one of the biggest key areas is going to be communication. I mean, if it isn't already, it's got to be when we get back into that period where fans can start coming back into stadiums again. And I've been astounded during like the lockdowns we've had and everything, of how businesses are just, some of them get it so right, which is great, but others get it so wrong. And I walked in Sainsbury's the other day, and there was this big sign saying, you must keep your distance. And I was thinking, I can't believe somebody gave the go ahead with that and didn't just say, couldn't we just put the word please on it or something like that? And I just wondered what you think what clubs can do straight after the, you know, when fans can start to go, but yeah, we start to think about fans going back to stadiums, that can really make a big difference from a communication point of view.
Well, you know, you put your finger on it. Yes. I mean, it's my background is communications and public relations, and the position of stakeholders in any business or organization, you know, is a critical relationship. And communication with those people central to the success or failure or otherwise of your business. And yeah, it does surprise me. It concerns me, and the reason the Fan Engagement Index exists and Fan Insights exists, and I'm going to keep, you know, developing the work that I'm doing, is that communication is far too often essentially what you call press releases, really. You know, it's press agentry is the term, in, if you like, in the study of public relations. And it's one way. And I know why, because you've got a lot to communicate because you're trying to communicate matches and things. But this is the bit that, say, a club like, obviously, a League One level, whatever, League Two level, clubs like Lincoln, Doncaster, Exeter, Wickham are good at Championship, for example. And I'm not just singling out, you know, there are plenty of others, but not enough, I might add. You know, they understand that. And then you've got clubs also, let's say clubs like Leicester and Everton, for example, get that this has to be, it's not even two-way. It has to be, you walk into a room with people in it, how would you behave if you didn't know those people, or you needed something, you had to establish a business relationship, you try to sell them something, get them interested in what you were doing. How would you treat them? And how would you, you know, how would you do that on a normal human level? And the problem with big organisations, and I do mean clubs with 2,000 fans, because they look like hypermarkets to the fans, even if they're a corner shop. The problem with them is they get lost in what they're doing on a day-to-day basis. And they forget sometimes what makes them what they are. And in the case of Sainsbury's, I think, without just diving in on them, I think they've forgotten over the last 3 to 5 years, because they've dashed for value, what their customer base is and how they need to speak and listen to them and listen to them. And I think football clubs have never been taught it. Mm-hmm. It's never been something they've had to learn. They've learned marketing. They've done a lot of marketing focused stuff, a lot of communicating, pushing messages. But a lot of this stuff is also quite new thinking, even if we think it's logical. Again, you come back to that time poor issue and resource poor issue. When are they going to learn this stuff? Yeah. So, yeah, there is going to be an issue with this. But again, I think, you know, there needs to be far, far more carrot than stick in this. There needs to be a lot of encouragement and support for good. I think there are some terrific people out there, genuinely great people doing this stuff. And that's what I want to try to do, is to go, OK, this is a moment in time which is terrible and awful. But yeah, the same problems in many respects are just appearing, you know, and they're being amplified by the crisis. We need to deal with the underlying issues of how we do and don't communicate and work with each other.
Thanks, Kev. Well, listen, thanks. It's once again, time's ahead of us, but that's really useful. And I suspect we may well be coming back and doing episode 2 of this, because there is so much to cover, so many different angles, you know, from the PR and comms perspective, the engagement perspective, the measurement.
I hope so. It's good talking to people from a, you know, you come from a slightly different perspective from me, and it's good, because it means we're crunching ideas around, and I want to increasingly make space for that, because I think it's really important for good people to be encouraged and supported.
And I would suggest that anybody listening to this podcast that wants to find out more can visit www.faninsights.co.uk, and you find the organisation on Twitter too. There's a lot of interesting information for clubs. I want to thank Darren. Thanks again, Darren, for joining us today. Thanks to our producer, who's looking smug as Bradford City appear to be signing up all the best players in League Two at the moment. But there you go. Who knows what will happen for the rest of the season? That's it for another episode. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at FanExperienceCo, Instagram at FanExperience.co, and via our website at www.fanexperienceco.com. Stay safe, everyone. Stay positive, and we'll see you next time.
The Fan Experience was recorded live. See you next time.